creators have a lot of mental illnesses associated with them, creative people in general. So, you know, self-doubt, imposter syndrome, and things like that are big in circles I've run in.
Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I am Mickey P here, as always. My guest today is Dice Bag of Dice Bag Games. How are we doing there, boss?
We are doing good, I suppose. Got the day off work, so that's good for me.
Oh, nice. Well, when you work for yourself, you have more days off than not if you want them. I'm the only person stopping me from that. So we have a new wrinkle here, folks. As you can see, I am talking to a person that is a big screen in front of us as another person. Some type of evil robot, half-robot overlord. Why don't you tell us about how you got into this whole VTuber world and how that has kind of... I guess let's get the history. How does all that come about?
Oh, well, VTubing, I basically just got into it because I liked VTubers and like, hey, I'm an artist. I could make my own. So I did. That's basically all there is to it. Also, it helps with online anonymity.
Hey, you feel like online anonymity is an important feature? Is that like a function of today, or is that just something that like you've always been into?
Well, ever since the internet started coming around back when I was young, you know, the mantra was, don't give any personal information out online. And that's what all the boomers would tell kids. But now it's kind of opposite, where boomers are just giving out their info everywhere. And
well, I mean, that's kind of funny. Like I said, I'm a millennial, like older millennial. And we absolutely came from where, like, by the time anybody cared about privacy, there wasn't anything that we hadn't already given away anyway. So it's kind of like, well, I guess too bad, too late.
Yeah, well, I at least try not to publicize too many things about me personally, but keeping my face out of there is one thing that helps.
The reason I do kind of bring that up is certainly like when you're talking about marketing, one of the things that I always kind of go after with my clients is to be authentic, be real, don't pretend to be people you're not, because it just gets harder. And eventually you're going to do a lot of dealing with people that you don't want to deal with if you're pretending to be something. Does having that anonymity, do you feel like that impedes your ability to be authentic with people? Or does it help you kind of hone in who the online character persona, or maybe even let you be a little bit more free about who you actually are?
Like, I'm definitely a big introvert type, so like having a degree of kind of separation between like me and the audience or whatever, people online, kind of frees up my my ability to say things that I might not otherwise. I'm definitely more reserved in real life than I am like when I'm online and all that.
Well, that's definitely interesting. So for you, like, because of your natural personality, it actually helps you be more authentic, to kind of have that freedom to be more open without like fear of repercussions on kind of coming back at you.
Yeah, I think that's a very common thing amongst VTubers. A lot of them are like big introverts, but You know, they'll get on a stream and start making poo-poo pee-pee jokes and all that, but not something they do in real life.
Yeah. So some of us, we'll do whatever we're going to do. Now, kind of moving past that, you're a game designer. It's one of the things I kind of wanted to talk to more of you guys on, like, because I'm a big fan of role-play games, and I've talked to a lot of comic book creators. I've talked to a lot of fantasy and science fiction authors on here. But, like, game people are a little bit more harder to kind of pin down, I guess. So how did you kind of fall down that path? Why wouldn't you go with something, like, I guess, that doesn't take quite so much effort, you know? You could, as opposed to, like, writing a book, you're going to create probably 10 books worth of material to, you know, do your thing.
I'm not so sure if it's so easy. Like, the main thing I would say is I'm not, like, a storyteller. So writing books is like learning an entirely new skill for me. So when it comes to, like, actual game mechanics, it's practically second nature. I've been, like, very interested in game design from a mechanical standpoint for a long time. Like, I was way into, like, reading articles on Magic the Gathering and D&D back in, probably a decade or so ago, when I was really into those games more. Well, mostly Magic. But, yeah, I've really steeped myself in that kind of information. So that's kind of the natural path for me. Also, just the fact that I also do art means that, like, my core skills are just making rules and making art, and that's pretty much all you need for, like, tabletop game design. So I figured that was my best entry into any kind of creative work, was that avenue.
So then my next question would be, you know, just given we're in the era of, you know, big, brash imagery and movement and everything's got to be videos, why would you gravitate towards tabletop as opposed to, like, you know, trying to get into, you know, the video game space?
Barrier to entry, mostly. I don't have to learn coding when I'm doing tabletop games. And that's the main thing. Otherwise, I'd definitely be doing video games. But, you know, just ever since I've been, like, working real jobs in life, I've been working, like, a lot of overtime and all that. So learning art and stuff like that was already time consuming enough, so I didn't want to pile on coding and all that on top of it as well before I started getting into actual putting out product.
Okay, now you kind of mentioned that it was, it sounds like Magic the Gathering and Dungeons and Dragons were the introduction to, like, gaming. Is that, like, would those be, like, your favorite types of tabletop games? Or, like, what is the game out there now that you would say best represents, like, your taste and style in gaming?
That's a good question, because I haven't been able to play a lot of tabletop games recently. I kind of dropped out of Magic because it went super woke, so I didn't want to keep giving money to that or wasting my time on it. Also, most of the people...
If it's any consolation, I got kicked out for politics reasons out of my Dungeons & Dragons World of Darkness group, so I get it.
Also, most of the people I played Magic with just either moved away or something, so it's either, you know, get online or just not have anyone to play with and just collect the cards and look at them in my binders, and that's it, but that's about it.
Well, my daughter likes to collect the Magic cards to look at them in her binder, but...
I sometimes do that for Pokemon cards, but not Magic.
Okay. You know, I was playing World of Darkness on Roll20 with a bunch of my friends from where I grew up. And then ultimately it was the 2016 election. And, you know, my belief that, you know, we probably shouldn't go attacking people that haven't, like, actually attacked or said they're even going to attack you, which made me a Nazi. And no more online gameplay for me, sadly. It was rough. But you know, obviously it lends to your whole point. Like, well, certainly if that's like the expectation you have, given your own personal situation, certainly isn't unrealistic to expect, you know, I should probably hide at least parts of who I am online, because this is people's reaction to people, you know, just being a little different. So understanding where you come from, tell me a little bit about your game. Most importantly, how I pronounce it, because I've never actually heard anybody pronounce the game, and I know how I would pronounce it, but I'm not sure how it sounds to you. So
go for it. Everybody's gotten it wrong except one guy.
I mean, personally, I would just say it's a fun way of saying creatures, but
you are correct. It's just a goofy spelling of creatures. It's a portmanteau of crystal creatures, actually. So
interesting.
That was the original working title, but I didn't want to stick to that, so I just kind of smashed them together.
Okay. And tell us a little bit more about what this game is. Like, to me, like, I look at it, it feels so almost like a Pokemon type of game, but it seems like there's definitely some more involvement than that.
Well, yeah, it's definitely Pokemon style, but, you know, I'm bringing in a lot of other influences because, frankly, the gameplay of Pokemon games is not the best part of it. But, you know, I do like the monster collecting stuff. I like the general style of the creatures and stuff that they have. So, like, I'm trying to bring that kind of element and, like, cram it together into, like, a D&D type of fantasy world here, and then build a role-playing game around that. And that's basically the entire gist.
Well, I mean, the fun thing about, like, Pokemon, obviously, is that you get to focus on the creatures. And I will always say, like, no matter what version of Dungeons & Dragons I was playing, the one book that was always a must-have for me was whatever the current version of the Monster Manual or Monsterpedia or whatever they're calling it in that particular version. Because it's just fun imagining this world with just full of so many things that aren't here. The idea of a place populated with things that aren't of this world, is that for you a part of the appeal of, you know, the idea of the game creation? Obviously, as an artist yourself, there's a lot of open runway in that.
Oh yeah, I've definitely been very interested in, like, things like world building, for example. That's probably one of my other things that I'm actually good at, I suppose. I will say I'm good at it, at least. Hasn't really been tested, but you know, it's game design, art, and world building. Those are my skills.
Now, you kind of brought this up when I asked people what questions you want to come up in the show. One of the ones you actually asked to come up was the idea of how game design impacts world building. And that's not necessarily, I guess, something I've ever really thought about. So I'm kind of interested to hear, like, what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, no, that's something, like, I've seen implemented in a lot of games, but I don't hear many people actually, like, discussing it as a concept. So, like, it's very interesting to me. Because, like, when I was talking about Magic the Gathering and all that, they would used to do, and maybe they still do, I haven't paid attention in recent years, but they do, like, whole articles about how they, like, built each of the new planes that they're visiting. And you could see that, like, they had very intentional ways of building the plane to incorporate, like, the five colors of mana and stuff like that. Because if you're building a card game like that, you kind of need to have a proportional representation of each color in each set. Otherwise, one gets left out or something. So that kind of has to be reflected in the world building in a way. And so they'll build a new world and have, like, here's the red faction, here's the blue faction, here's the green faction. Or they'll mix it up and have, like, dual colors or tricolors or enemy colors mixed together or something like that. So that kind of turned me on into thinking, like, how else could this be used? And really, like when you're doing a tabletop RPG, it's almost like the world building and the game design are basically the same thing. Because if you make a rule about how the game world functions, then that's something that your players can interact with and kind of game themselves. And I came to that conclusion, to that realization, probably like a year ago, where I'm like, huh, I can work in a lot of this world building as like new mechanics or something like that.
Well, certainly, like my personal favorite game is New World of Darkness. And that's a really tough game because of like the way that the way that it handles its dice rolls. It's done with successes, and it always felt like it made the world A seem a little bit more gritty, which goes hand in hand with I think how they wanted that game to feel. But it also felt more natural to me, like when you're firing off rounds at a monster, like it should be pretty darn hard to hit the damn thing. And so you want to have a more difficult, you know, system for that. And so definitely the system goes hand in hand with how the gameplay is going to feel. And like that world is just inherently going to feel more dangerous when it's harder to kill things. And especially when you're dealing with monsters as like humans in a Mortals campaign, you should feel like you're going to die in pretty much every situation you're in.
Yeah, well, there's also like just things about like how the magic systems function and things like that. Like in D&D, the whole thing with like spell slots and the way people memorize spells and things like that, that plays into how the world will function. And that's just a straight up game mechanic right there. And I've seen a lot of video games do this too, especially like indie games are very, they'll use this a lot where they practically like build the entire game world around like a specific mechanic that's very prominent. Like I played this one game, I forget what it's called off the top of my head, but it was like the premise of the game in the world is that like you're some kind of weirdo manifestation from like a storybook or something. And you have to like go into other storybooks and like fight off some kind of corrupting force that's like changing the stories or something like that.
I'm interested in this game, just for the record. It's very up my alley.
It's been a while since I played this, but it's a little fuzzy. It's something weird like that. But yeah, just the whole premise like is like it's a coat of paint over the mechanics to like justify why like the game mechanics are the way they are.
Well, it's like if you ever play any H.P. Lovecraft themed game, there's always going to be a game mechanic centered around madness. And it's usually the biggest pain in the ass part of the game. But it's also like part of the structure and why the game is the way the game is. Also part of why the story is the way the story is. I mean, the whole cool part about Lovecraft is, it's, you know, otherworldly beings and always on the verge of sanity.
Yeah, it's kind of like, what's that game? Darkest Dungeon. That was one that was very tight when it came to the resource management. Excuse me. And you know, they dealt with the sanity a lot for your characters and stuff like that. That game drove me crazy though.
Anything that has a sanity check, honestly, they're World of Darkness had one, and I'm going to be honest, most of the people I played with, we just kind of ignored that particular thing because it was more cumbersome as a rule than it was worth having. So, you know, it all is what it is. One of the questions that you also brought up, this one actually was really interesting to me. So when I ask you, what's a topic in marketing we could talk about? And you mentioned getting over the stigma of marketing. And as a guy who does marketing. I love talking about it. I love getting into the psychology of like why people want things and how you can actually convince them that what you have is worth having. When you're talking about the stigma, I think I've got a pretty solid idea of what you're talking about. As I bring up that Niobe Games conversation I had with Draw and Talk, Tyler, that guy just all apparently, according to him, all marketers are scam artists. They don't do anything valuable for anybody. Even though most of the really good marketers I know, they make percentage. They make part of what they make off of people in most cases. The exception being like low tier copywriters that'll just charge like hourly rates and stuff like that. So it's like, if they don't make money, then you don't make money, then they don't make money. So just the idea of someone hating marketing for hating marketing's sake seemed weird to me. But I do recognize it's out there. So I'm assuming that's kind of where you're coming from with that question, right?
Yeah, it's especially like prominent amongst creatives. It just feels like it feels dirty to kind of go out there and shove your stuff into people's faces and trying to get them into it. But it's something that people need to do if they want to make any kind of living off of this stuff.
If nobody sees your stuff, nobody buys your stuff, period.
Right. And like, I don't think anybody actually likes ads unless they're a professional marketer, maybe. But, you know, I've kind of come to a realization not long ago that, you know, most of ads are annoying. Yes, I hate ads. I don't like it when ads are in my way, but I just scroll past them and all that. And at best, they're forgotten. Then there's like the 1% of ads, 99% of ads. I'm like, get this out of the way. But then every once in a while, I come across one and I'm like, oh, I want this.
So my wife used to complain so much about Facebook and all the ads that she'd get. And I'm like, well, that's because you're doing Facebook wrong. And the reason I say that is because so for me, I went to great lengths to make sure that what Facebook would show me was very curated. And so there was like a sweet spot where like all Facebook showed me was bands that I might like. Like, that was the only advertisements I got because I'd like tell them not to show me anything else and then make sure I clicked, oh, this is cool. Show me more of this. And so I'd get like maybe 2 or 3 posts from people I know and then like an ad for some band. And, you know, I guess I'm about like, I don't have any problem with people showing me things that I might actually want. My problem is when they show me crap I don't want. Or when I go onto YouTube and I'm trying to click a trailer for a movie I'm interested in seeing, and then they show me a trailer for a movie before I can watch the trailer that I want to watch. And I'm like, I opted in to watch this advertisement, guys. Like, you're advertising me on my advertisement. Like, this just feels wrong. Feels stupid.
Yeah, it doesn't endear you to the platform, really, does it? Especially if you're if you're watching some video just for like the vibes and you just got it on the background, like it's some kind of nice calming thing that you can just put on for background noise while you're working, and then an ad comes on in the middle of it.
Well, I'm of a mind, I mean, with YouTube's trajectory in the past couple of years and the way that they've been treating their creators, I don't think YouTube's going to be around in 5 years. Like, I think something will usurp it. I don't know if it's anything that exists yet. Probably not. But they just treat the people that actually make content too shitty to stay around. Like, they keep raising that minimum bar to actually paying anyone. And, you know, you have to be on YouTube for so long now, like, and create so much content to maybe get seen, to even like eke out a few pennies out of them. It's like, I don't know who can do that much free work for as much as it takes to like wait it out.
Yeah. Well, I've seen actually YouTube probably in the last 6 months or so, they've actually been doing more to help small channels from what I've seen. I regularly see like videos pop up in my recommended that have like single digit views from brand new creators. And I'm like, huh, that's weird.
Interesting. I still see the same crap I've seen for the past however many years. So yeah, that is interesting.
I think they also lowered the minimum requirements for monetization recently, but I haven't looked into that.
They backtracked on it, essentially?
I guess so. I think it's like half of what they had it before.
Okay.
But I know this because I recently started up a YouTube specifically for the game, so I've been looking into that.
So to kind of call back to the original question that you were asking, and this is something that like you'll get in probably any sales book, and it's definitely something that I'll stand by. And it's the idea that anything you're trying to sell, you should think is amazing. And it's you should believe that it's going to enhance who, at least whoever your target market is, their life is going to be better for having it. And so as a creative, you should never feel guilty about wanting to bring something that's going to bring other people joy. You may be wrong, but the whole idea is that it's capable of doing that. You believe it's capable of doing that, and they're going to miss out on what this has to offer them if you don't bring it to them. And it's like, you know, anyone will tell you, like, if you don't believe in your product, just quit, because you're never going to be able to sell it. Part of being in sales is like believing in the thing that you're trying to sell.
Yeah, I think a lot of creatives have that mentality. They're just kind of reluctant. I don't know how to put this. Maybe creators have a lot of mental illnesses associated with them. Creative people in general. So, you know, self-doubt, imposter syndrome, and things like that are big in circles I've run in. I mean, even in VTubers, when they're not really like artists or anything, I hear people like blackpilling all the time about things that aren't as big of a deal as they should be.
Well, it's funny you say that. I mean, obviously, I come from like the world of music. Like, I've been a musician my whole life, so I've experienced all of this from, you know, being a frontman in bands and whatnot. So when I decided that I wanted to make a marketing book, which hopefully is going to be out this November, it's the Role Player's Guide to Marketing and Living a Better Life in General. And as with every sales and marketing book I've ever read, part of any of those books is about getting past imposter syndrome. Like, you have to kind of believe in yourself and move past like the things that we think that hold us back. You know, the self-limiting beliefs, as they say it. So it's just funny that you bring that particular thing up. And I'm thinking, oh, that's been one of the biggest parts of my book. Like, literally my introduction was why I thought I was a piece of crap most of my life and how I've worked to get past it.
I mean, for my part, I kind of suffer from like a combination of that, but also thinking I'm the best thing since sliced bread. Basically flip between two of those.
It tends to happen. Like, what is for me, it's like I've got two songs that I've a song I wrote. Orson Welles is one I wrote in my band, Purveyors of Fiction. And the whole point is like this guy who feels like he's, you know, better than everybody else and knows better. And certainly that song was my way of tackling my own demons. And like, it's like people say it's a lack of self-esteem. It's like, well, no, I feel pretty good about myself. I just think everyone else has bad esteem towards me and they're stupid.
Yeah. I'm confident in my abilities, but not my social skills.
Yeah. It's like, I'm confident in what I know is good and right and perfect. And I just think everyone else is dumb and they're not going to see me for what I am. They don't see the genius that is me.
Mm-hmm.
So no, dude, I feel that in a big way. So we're kind of getting towards the end here. Where can we send people so that they can learn more about your game? It sounds like the game itself is still under construction. Do we have like an idea of when a playable version will be out there? Are you beta testing it that people can get involved with, anything like that?
Well, I've got a website called creatures.com, spelled with a Y, C-R-Y-Cures. So most of the rules that I'm confident in are already up there. It's got character creation. It's got a bunch of creatures that you can collect in your games. And you can basically run a game from that. Like, it's not all the, it's not everything I intend to have, but it's the basics. It's got a combat system. It's got skills, talents, all the character creation stuff.
When you've been doing solo runs of the game on YouTube, it looks like.
Yeah, that too. Oh, yeah, that's another place you can go. The Creatures RPG YouTube channel. I just started a solo campaign. I'm on my third episode now, just recently, putting out one a week just to kind of give the mechanics a test and have something to put out there for people to see. It's kind of a pain trying to get people together for an RPG. That's definitely something I've been like working on, because the whole solo campaign is something I'm trying to get to a point where you can just play it yourself without needing to have an entire group if you want to.
Well, I only know a handful of people that even bother playing solo tabletop games. And those are the guys that really love tabletop gaming. And it's like, most of them are, you know, in jobs like college professor, where they're only doing it because they've got an hour a week where they're not dealing with wife and family, and all they want to do is play. and they don't have time to organize other people to do it.
Time constraints are definitely a factor for me. Being a lifelong night shifter and all that, it's been hard to get people together for any kind of game like that.
Right on, man. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to get out before we call it a show?
I guess I could shill my streaming channels. I stream on YouTube, on Rumble, on Twitch, on Odyssey, but I don't think anybody uses that. Just look up Dice Bag Games.
I like Odyssey. I wish Odyssey would have taken off. Like, that's the one that I prefer. I hate Rumble. Odyssey is way better, but like, it just, they don't have the financial backing to be what Rumble's were trying to be.
Yeah, I don't know which one of those is really gonna take off. I feel like Rumble has a better chance than Odyssey. I think Odyssey just went too hard on the blockchain tech and what people weren't ready for it. But yeah, I stream art every Saturday night. Let's see, 8 p.m. Central Time. And that's where I'm just usually working on art for the game and all that. So if anybody wants to come by and chat, talk about the game or whatever I'm doing, or just shoot the shit, whatever, I'm down for it. I can always use company while I'm drawing. That's why I do these streams.
Well, I'd like to thank you so much for coming up, man. It's been a fun conversation. I'll have to get on there. And honestly, one of the things I do like about what I've seen in the game is that it seems like something that, as a father, would be really easy to share with my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the characters, it's not to say that it looks, I mean, she's not really a child, but there's nothing that's going to be like super offensive to anybody, like to bring them in. You know, not a lot, it doesn't look like there's a lot of blood and gore and all that. The creatures are generally kind of cute, friendly looking.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep things like in the Pokemon paradigm. Yeah,
right on. Well, you have yourself a good one, and thanks again for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.